Not everyone in Michigan has adequate access to food, let alone healthy options. In fact, there are parts of Michigan that could be described as food deserts. With that in mind, a five-year, $4 million study on food insecurity is now underway at the University of Michigan. Good morning, I'm David Fair, welcoming you to the March edition of First Friday Focus on the Environment. On the first Friday of each month, I'm joined by the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, and together we take roughly 20 minutes to look at an issue of environmental importance. Lisa Wozniak, good morning, and thank you for coming back.
Good morning, David.
And each month, we bring in an expert guest to help inform us, and today, Lisa, we have the head of the U of M study.
We do indeed. Our guest this morning is Dr. Docita Taylor. Dr. Taylor is a professor of environmental sociology at the University of Michigan's School of Natural Resources and Environment. She is also the chair of the American Sociological Association's Environment and Technology Chapter and the program director for the Multicultural Environmental Leadership Development Initiative. Welcome to the show, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
That sounds like it would be fun to fit on a business card.
In 2009, Dr. Taylor, you published an award-winning book entitled The Environment and the People in American Cities. And just this last fall, you kicked off, as David pointed out, a five-year, $4 million study on food insecurity in Michigan with a federal grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Let me start by asking perhaps a baseline question. For the purpose of this study, what is the definition of food insecurity?
When we think of food insecurity, we can think of it in several ways. Someone might not have enough food to meet their basic nutritional needs. They could also be food insecure if they are not able to purchase food because they can't afford it, or if they can't get to a place that sells healthy and affordable food. Or, for instance, if they live in an area where there are like highways or freeways, big roadways going between their house and where the shops are, they could be food insecure because there's a lack of access to the food. So there are several ways in which to think about it.
And then to piggyback on that, how would you define a food desert?
A food desert, and that term is becoming somewhat controversial now, as the typical definition is one in which if there are no healthy food outlets within, say, a mile of one's home, and a mile is chosen because it's a distance that can be walked, you can do it on a bicycle easily, public transportation, or drive very quickly to an area like that. So they use that 1 mile as a cutoff. So if there are no food outlets within a mile, then some have used that term, food desert, to describe that. However, there are many folks and food activists in Michigan and other places are really challenging that term. And even in our study, we do challenge that somewhat, because many of the studies that first identified, quote-unquote, food deserts looked for very large supermarkets. They did not look for medium-sized stores or small stores, the ethnic supermercados, the Asian food markets, those smaller stores that when you look on the outside, they look small. They look like they don't have a lot in them. But actually, many of those stores are serving very important functions in that they have the foods that the community residents desire and want and are foods that tie into their cultural background and heritage.
So typically, if you're willing to look, you can find the food.
You can find the food in many places. And the old definition of just looking for a big store like a Kroger or a Meijer, and if you don't find it, you say, we have a food desert. That, we are arguing, doesn't necessarily apply. You really have to look at some of these smaller stores. That being said, overall, there is an agreement that there are places in Michigan where there is definitely a sparsity of stores that will sell fresh fruits, vegetables, fresh produce, fresh meats, dairy that people need and want. So regardless of how we define size, overall, the larger argument holds that there are areas that are lacking in these stores. Whether or not we call it a desert implies absence of something. And so that's the terminology that people find somewhat problematic when it's applied to their community, when they can say, look, We have some small stores. They're small, but they have what we want and we're looking for.
So your study focuses mm-hmm. on 18 different cities in Michigan. Mm-hmm. What are those? Some of those cities, and mm-hmm. how are they chosen for this study?
Many food studies, and we talk about in terms of food access, they tend to look at the very big cities. So Detroit, for instance, has been studied quite a bit, several times by different researchers. And one of the reasons, and people often ask, why isn't Detroit in the study? One of the reasons we don't have it as a focal city is we know that there are other studies ongoing that are looking at food access issues now in Detroit. And if we'd put that in, the USDA probably wouldn't have funded us because it would have said, well, we funded several other groups to work on this very same issue in Detroit. We are learning the lessons from Detroit, and we are incorporating some of the ideas because we actually have collected some data on Detroit prior to setting up our studies. So what we've done is we've looked at the medium-sized and smaller cities in Michigan, a city like Flint that has some of the characteristics of Detroit, predominantly black areas with a lot of poverty. We replicated that. Benton Harbor is another city like that. However, we wanted to test different hypotheses. So, for instance, if a city is not predominantly black, if it doesn't have a lot of vacant and abandoned property, do we still find the same dynamics of neighborhoods that are lacking in food outlets that are healthy? So, therefore, we have cities like Warren, we have Taylor, Inkster, these smaller cities, some very close to Detroit, where we look at this. Very few studies have actually studied Native Americans, Hispanics, Muslims in their studies. Michigan has all of that. So we thought we would take advantage of that. We're studying St. Ignace. We're looking at Sault Ste. Marie, Bay Mills. Those are three Native American communities. And we wanted to incorporate that as a part of our study. We also wanted to look at the Upper Peninsula. Then we look at the western part of the state. This is where we look at Grand Rapids, Muskegon, Holland. These are medium-sized cities and have, I think, important lessons that they might offer us in understanding urban food systems and the dynamics that may or may not lead to a paucity of food stores.
You're listening to WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm David Fair, sitting alongside my co-host for this monthly feature. Lisa Wozniak is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. Our guest this morning is Dr. Dorceta Taylor. And Dr. Taylor is a professor of environmental sociology at the U of M School of Natural Resources and is currently heading up a $4 million five-year study on food insecurity in Michigan.
You have researched food justice and environmental sociology for years. There seems, unless I'm incorrect, to be a rise in food insecurity issues today. Can you point to some of the key reasons for that?
Globally, food insecurity is rising, and part of it stems from the downturn in the economy, not just in the U.S., but in several countries around the world. So if we start looking from 2007, 2008, we had bread riots going on in several third world cities as the price of food shot up and people were unable to purchase food. So it's a global phenomenon. When we look at the U.S., we see some of that mirrored. We don't necessarily have as much starvation in the U.S. as we see in developing countries, but what we have is that rise in food insecurity where families can't afford to buy food, they have to cut back on the amount of food they eat, they have to skip meals, kids are going to school without food, they have to cut back on portion sizes. And so when we look at those dynamics, that comes under the umbrella of food insecurity, and we see it rising. Again, as the economy was tanking in 2008, 2009, the number of people who were on the margins who couldn't afford healthy food or even any food at all started to increase.
Yeah, according to Feeding America, Hunger Initiative Group. Food insecurity as of 2010, the latest available figures for Michigan, 19% of the state population, that's over 1.8 million people that are living in food insecure situations. Here in Washtenaw County, it was 13%, over almost 45,000 people. Yeah. I think there's a lack of awareness of how significant this issue really is.
Yes, there is. And particularly, say, in a state like Michigan that one doesn't normally think of right off the top as a state where you'd find so much of it. It's a state that grows a lot of food. So the irony of it is we are in an agricultural state, a state that produces a fair amount of food, yet we have not just pockets, but large areas around the state where people simply don't have enough food. You know, corollary statistics are that, again, from 2008 through to the present, the amount of people who have to rely on food banks, who have to go to soup kitchens, shelters, is also increasing quite rapidly in the state of Michigan. So we at the University of Michigan, my colleagues at Michigan State, Lake Superior State, Grand Valley State, and University of Wisconsin, we thought we should, first of all, try to study and understand what are the dynamics that are leading us in that direction. Our study, we will speak to farmers, we'll speak to food retailers, try to figure out what is preventing the food from getting to people, and then look at things like how can we help in terms of helping people to gain better access to food.
So at the same time, local food and farmers markets are becoming more and more important to communities throughout our state. How is the increase in these fresh food markets, many of them are right in urban communities, and the growing importance of local food impacting the communities with the greatest food insecure populations?
And that's a very good question, because one of the things we hope to do with our study is to help to connect farmers market, food cooperatives, community CSAs, community-supported agricultural initiatives, to the poorest people. Right now, if you go to a typical farmer's market, you don't see the very poor people there. Or if you go to a typical food cooperative, these tend to be more middle-class consumers, predominantly white consumers. So with initiative like ours and with other initiatives around the state, that's really talking to the farmers that go to the farmer's market to figure out how can they get their produce to the poorest people. That's actually changing, where now several farmers markets have double up or double snap programs where people can get coupons to go and purchase food. The question could be, if you provide coupons and opportunities for lowest income people to purchase organic healthy foods, will they do it? And the answer, I think, is a resounding yes.
Yeah, it's happening right here in Ypsilanti.
In Ypsilanti, yeah. Growing Hope, one of my former students, Amanda Edmonds, and Danielle Gartner, both of those are former students of mine who are doing that project in Ann Arbor. The farmers market is starting to open up. It's also not only to get low-income families, minority families, to purchase more at these outlets, but it's also getting minority farmers to be a part of the farmers markets. And in some cases, it's difficult because of the cost of paying to have your booths in the farmers market. The minority farmers don't have enough money sometimes to pay the entire summer's fee so that they can participate in the market.
So economics plays into every aspect of this issue.
It does.
And in understanding why it needs to be solved and solved relatively quickly, don't we need to look at the repercussions of not solving it from physical health, mental health, maternal health issues that occur when people don't have access to healthy foods?
Yes, it is something we simply cannot continue to ignore. And we do have to look at the health parts. We have to look at policy making, because at the state level, federal level, there's certainly we certainly have to demand better food policies that are, A, getting food into people's hands, helping people to connect with both the food we're growing locally, but with other means of finding food, so that we're not having hunger and we're not having food insecurity in Michigan to the extent that we're having it.
So your study is funded by the Department of Agriculture, and we have in our midst here in Michigan one of the most powerful voices at the federal level in Senator Deborah Stabenow, in that she chairs the Ag
Subcommittee.
Absolutely. So can you speak to that a little bit and how your study may fit into the role that she plays in leadership?
Yeah, one of the things we're hoping to do is to look really to study the policies that Michigan has, and of course overall federally, and to be able to have conversations with her. We're probably not ready right this second, but certainly to have some conversation with her and other both state and federal appointees about how both policies can go awry. For instance, in the state of Michigan, most of the places where you can use your SNAP card and your bridge card are places that sell highly processed food, very salty, very fatty, very few fruits and vegetables. One of my students last week went into one of these gas stations, pharmacies, dollar stores, and she said what served as the fruit section was a little basket with a few wilted apples and a few other fruits. Because by law, they're supposed to have at least two fruits, two vegetables, if they are on the bridge card, if they accept bridge cards. But it seems as if there's very little follow-through in insisting that these companies or these stores, even though some of them are relatively small, actually provide more options for people. So something like that we're going to be really looking into very seriously. In places like Chicago, they're developing what they're calling WIC stores, where these stores have a full range of healthy foods, and participants in WIC and SNAP can go to these places and get the same full range of foods you and I can get if we go to Kroger or Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or Plum's.
At some point in the conversation, we also have to take into account personal accountability. And where does that play in your study in how to encourage people to become more accountable for themselves and the foods they choose to purchase and eat?
Yeah. One part of our study, and this is being spearheaded by my colleague at Grand Valley State, Debbie Lown, and she's a nutritionist. And part of what we'll be doing there is to, first of all, teach people about healthy eating and exercise and activity, teach people about portion sizes. So they'll go through a mini training for about 2 weeks. Then we will actually monitor their activities. So they'll be wearing an actigraph for about 2 weeks. It's going to monitor everything from exercise, activity, heart rate, that sort of stuff. And then put them through a gardening program. So another aspect of what we do, we have funded 6 community groups, Flint, Grand Rapids, Ypsilanti, Sault Ste. Marie, and Detroit. So we do have a Detroit component, D-Town Farm, and they will be developing community gardens and raised bed gardens, helping people to learn how to create these garden plots, what kinds of seeds and seedlings to plant, helping them with the planting, cooking, preparing the food. So we're doing that kind of intervention also, wherein the personal responsibility part comes in. Can you change your lifestyle? Can you change your activity level? Can you change behaviors? And how does that impact health and nutritional intake?
Obviously, education is going to be a huge component in all of this. Mm-hmm. Our time together is just about out, but as a final question, I just wanted to ask, as we walk away from this conversation, as we move on with our days and on into our lives, what is the one thing you would like us to take with us in our minds about food insecurity?
That it should be an intolerable condition. And in Michigan, we really should have none of it.
I thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
That is Dr. Dorcita Taylor. And Dr. Taylor is a professor of environmental sociology at the University of Michigan School of Natural Resources, currently heading up a $4 million 5-year study on food insecurity in Michigan. And a thank you to my co-host for First Friday Focus on the Environment. Lisa Wozniak is the executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And Lisa, when we see you in April, we'll be during the pledge drive, raising money to keep programs like this one on the air.
Which is always a great activity. I look forward to it, David.
Me too. I'm David Fair, and you're listening to Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU.